Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined today by Ryan McCaffrey, Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Have you been waiting for this moment,
too?
Product placement at its finest. And Brian Altano. And our topic today comes from one of our viewers in the UK, Josh. And he's concerned. He says, I'm from the UK, and like the rest of the world, I'm playing GTA 5. What I've noticed, though, especially on the radio stations, is that the whole game seems to make jokes at the USA's expense. I know it's an intentional satire on American culture from a British or Scottish point of view, but knowing how easily offended people get nowadays, I'm looking at you, Medal of Honor opposing forces. I'm just curious as to why you guys think GTA 5 is invulnerable to this and actually beloved by America.
First of all, your cardigan slash sweater thing is amazing.
I already commented on that.
I don't know if it's amazing, but let's forget
about Josh's question.
What are you doing at work? You should be by a fireplace somewhere.
I wish we could have a little
Hello. Corncob pipe.
Welcome to IGN Game Scoop.
What's up, everybody?
Yeah, the game does poke a lot of fun at American culture, and yet Americans love the game.
It's funny. It's well written. That's the thing. Yeah. It's just, it's so...
Is it funny because it's true?
That's what I was going to say. That's where the humor comes from. Right. Sure, I mean, listen.
They're not just making this stuff up.
But you have to fly past 40 more offensive things to get to that. It's like getting mad that people are cursing in porn.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they're also f***ing.
Yes, they are doing.
Like, I mean, you have to get past this. There's so many layers of things to get offended to before you get to, like, and also they called Americans fat.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot going on there. Like, yeah, you shot a cop. And then someone called Americans fat.
Like, let's start. Everyone overlooks the number of cops that get shot in the face.
Yeah.
Like, no, in real life, people are offended when cops get shot. But it's like you start, it's with such a high bar.
Yeah.
That then maybe, you know, talking about how people don't read books anymore on the radio is
And it's also, it's sort of a timestamp of where we are right now. Like, I mean, like, there was the 1950s Americana that sort of showed this carb-obsessed cheeseburger culture with the cool glasses and stuff like that. GTA is talking about the America we are in now, and America now is fat and
celebrity
dumb and celebrity dumb.
The thing is, good satire, you're not going to get offended by.
Yeah.
Because it's good.
You're like, oh.
It's like pointing out the logical fallacies rampant or just, you know, hypocrisy. Thank you. Things. Boy, I'm looking real intelligent today.
Told you Americans were dumb.
I know. It clearly needed the pick-me-up.
So I think America is the greatest country on planet Earth, but...
America.
America.
8.5.
Maybe not so much
that's
these
days. There's no 10 on planet Earth?
America is an 8. Good, not great. But that doesn't mean, like, most of the stuff is, like, very true. Like, I live here, I'm happy to live in America, I don't want to live in another country, but that doesn't mean that there's not a laundry list of things that I dislike, I think are silly, or groups of people that live here that I don't like. And GTA is ruthless about, you know, it'll make fun of rich people, poor people, hicks, people that live in the city, you know, people of all races and creeds.
I was just going to say that, it hits the left and the right politically, so it's just, there's something in there, if you can't laugh at yourself...
Yeah.
Right. It's the South Park law where you target everybody and no one can get offended.
Right.
Right.
So GTA 5 is the biggest game out there right now. Everybody's playing this game. It has very broad mass market appeal. But I wonder how many people know it's not an American-made game. Right?
Oh, more than you think.
Really?
Probably.
And that's, realize that? I just wonder if that's also significant. It's not Americans making fun of themselves. It's
right. No, and
being
but I
made
think,
fun of by
I think
British
that's
people.
that's part of its genius is it's the Hauser brothers. Who live in America now. They live in New York.
That's what I mean. Like, they live here, so it's sort of like,
But they bring that perspective of that, you know, they live in America, but they still have that outsider perspective to sort of have a bit more of a distance.
They're observers.
Than say, we do, who've spent our whole lives here.
Sure. I think the most patriotic people in America right now are the ones that really get it for all its flaws, right? It's not just, you take the good with the bad, and that's why you stay here. Like, if you were to ignore the fact that we are fat and celebrity obsessed and illiterate, then you'd miss the all the good joy that comes.
Are you
with
making fun of
too.
Me from earlier? The no. You should.
I'm not that subtle.
This game that parodies modern American life is popular around the world because American culture, American pop culture, is world culture, right?
Well, that's yeah. the thing. Like that's
our main export. Yeah. That is our primary export.
Yeah.
I don't think it would work with any other country, right? Like a game that parodies modern life in Brazil, like would we even get it?
Well, exactly.
Like, did we sure get there's... Sleeping Dogs?
I mean,
most of us didn't.
No, that is why I believe we'll never see a Grand Theft Auto that's not set.
That's why
in
they don't set it. That's why they.
Yeah. I mean, they outright said that, right?
Right, and they did one of the early GTAs before it blew up and sort of found its calling and became what it is today. It was in London, but I don't think that's ever going to happen again.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there's only a handful of cities. Like, where else could you set a GTA? Like, these cities that set... you can never have been to New York City and you understand intuitively through, you know, film and television,
pop culture.
A lot about what goes on in New York City.
Right.
And, you know, it's the same with L.A. I think maybe the Bay Area, well, like San Francisco, could be a city like
they
that.
They did that in San Andreas.
Sure.
And Vegas as well. Yeah. And I think we will see those cities again in some form or another, whether it's, you know, maybe as an expansion city for GTA Online or as the setting for GTA 6.
Yeah. I think it comes from a place of truth, which is why you wouldn't see people getting too upset. You know, if there's like a black comedian, then I'll laugh and be like, yeah, I'm white and I'm totally the way that this guy is making fun of me for being. But like, as long as you can see like a kernel of truth in it, then.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I don't see any reason to get offended by that. I mean, GTA is a cartoonish look at what we have now, but it's also a look at what we have now, right? I mean, you have to start with the base somewhere and build on top of it. I just think it's more, the more realistic video games get and the more we play them and the more introverted we become, the more our escapist fantasies are really just like slightly mocked versions of the things that are right outside of our door, you know? I mean, Sleeping Dogs, why I mentioned that is it's sort of like, I don't know if that world was right or not, because I've never been any of the places where that game takes place or any of the things that franchise is trying to do. I assume people in Hong Kong are just driving around
surfing
jumping dragon
from
tattoos, jumping, killing each other and stuff like that. I don't know.
Yakuza everywhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can only take what I've seen in movies and in TV shows and in video games and stuff like that and piece those things together. But I couldn't imagine them getting offended by that unless it was something that was so derogatory. I mean, there's no one here in America that could stick up and go, you know, we're not dumb and celebrity obsessed. Well,
but I also don't feel like the reason it doesn't offend me personally is because I don't feel like it's poking fun at, like, when they say Jimmy the Gamer, I'm like, well, I'm not like him. And like when the whole overarching storyline is about private militaries and about Meriwether and about how they like infiltrate all aspects of our lives, I'm like, that's not a decision I made. So it's like, how can I get offended by it? Like, yeah, our country's messed up, but like, I don't subscribe to, like, you know, I don't think that. It's not like I'm laughing until they're, you know, thumbing the eye on something that's important to me, and then I'm not laughing anymore.
It's interesting you mentioned Jimmy the Gamer, actually, because that's actually the stereotype that hits closest to home, I guess, to like us or to our audiences. Because yeah, I've stayed. There have been days where, you know, back in high school, my dad was like, "You can get a job." I'm like, "No, I'm just gonna play Super Mario World or whatever."
The game strikes a weird balance between it makes fun of a character in the game for sitting at home and playing games all day, and everyone playing the game is like, "Yeah, he sucks. Jimmy sucks." As they're sitting home playing the game all day.
Plus, get it together,
like,
Jimmy.
He's playing online. He's making homophobic remarks and like talking about the other players' moms and like.
Yeah.
There are people playing GTA 5 who do exactly that.
Yeah. Do you think they get it? Do you think they see themselves
they just
in
think
that
it's
character?
Funny. They probably don't. I don't think they spend too
much
time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't see myself personally in much of what GTA is, you know, sort of trying to make fun of. And so maybe that's why I don't get offended too much.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for the good question, Josh. It is Josh, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Josh.
We'll go with that.
Stay tuned for more from IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined now by Greg Miller, Colin Moriarty, Brian Altano. We're about to talk about our most anticipated games of this holiday season, 2013. Topic suggestion comes from ProPat. He says, leading up to the release of next-gen consoles, I was wondering what games from October to December are you most excited for? I was most excited for Watch Dogs.
Yeah, funny how that happened. I was too.
And I was robbed.
I wasn't. I knew things were awry from quite some time. Meanwhile, you and I have been playing Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag all day long, laughing hysterically. Right.
But there's something different about that game to me. That feels different to me than, like, I guess it's the setting that isn't just like, hey, modern city.
Sure.
There's no cell phones. Nobody's calling me the whole time we're playing Assassin's Creed. There's no cars.
Yeah. There's cats.
Yet.
Dogs.
Pirates. Yeah. So is that one of your most anticipated games?
Yeah, for me, I mean, when we saw it at PAX, that was like the turning point for me of like, holy crap, this thing looks awesome. And then playing it today, I'm like very adamant. I've gone through all these tricks of trying to make sure my save will work on my retail PS4 when I get that going. So do my best to make sure I bring it with me. But yeah, I'm having a great time, and it's definitely living up to what I want out of it.
It's definitely one of the meatiest next-gen games, too, just in terms of it's like 20-something hours to beat the single player.
Meatiest?
Yeah. 40 hours to do all the stuff that isn't part of the solo campaign. And Greg and I went in today going, you know, we're going to play a lot, but we don't want to do too much that it kind of like makes it so when we go to play it again on the first day, we have to repeat everything over again. But we've just been doing side stuff, and it's so much fun.
It's like, oh, we're going to go over there and do that. Well, no, I'm going to go try to get this note page, or I'm going to go sync all the animus points, or the lookout points.
Was there a sweet opening scene where you climb on top? Climbed up a wall in a theater, and no one noticed you.
No, they didn't.
Even
do that.
You're like hanging around and like you're in front
you're
of the candles.
You're walking on people's heads. None of that stuff.
Sounds good.
Colin, you're wearing a Knack T-shirt.
I am.
Does that mean it's one of your most anticipated holiday games?
No.
No, I just needed a free T-shirt.
No, I like Knack. Knack's good. I played it many times now, and it's a lot of fun. People are going to be really surprised by that game. I think it's hard, and it's got an old school slant. I think people that grew up with, especially in the 90s with the Crash Bandicoots of the world and Spyro and stuff like that, will have a kind of a kindred attachment to Knack, and they don't realize it yet. No, my most anticipated game is still Resogun.
And is that going to be a day one?
Yeah, it's a day one PS4 game. It's going to be free for PlayStation Plus. It's from Housemarque, so they're the guys that did Super Stardust and Outland and Dead Nation. Exceptional developer. What I'm happy about, some people give me shit about this, being so excited about this game. Not that that really is relevant to me, but what I'm promising you is that this is one of the games where it's just like, it's all about gameplay and just sitting there and chasing high scores. It's not overly complicated. There's no story. Like, there's a place for that, and I love that kind of stuff. But this is a game I can see myself for months, just like I was with Super Stardust, just like I was with Dead Nation, playing this game and just chasing high scores and chasing my friends on the leaderboards. It's a great deal of fun. And when I went to Sony yesterday, actually, and played it with Ryan McCaffrey, who had never played the game, he was, not, I don't want to say reluctant, but I'm like, play this game. And he's like, all right, I'll get to it. And he started playing and like would not put the controller down. There was like a line of people behind him waiting to play. And he like, just like, one more time. He's still there playing.
He's got a beard
on. He's not on this episode.
The other game that I'm really excited about, and people are going to laugh, is I think I'm super excited about E's Memories of Celceta on Vita. It's
I don't think that's funny. I think it's perfectly valid.
Yeah, it's a really promising RPG. E's is an old school, like TurboGrafx and stuff. It goes way back, and
they remade one or more of the E's for the DS.
PSP, I have a bunch of them. And that's like a really niche series that people still play, and a group of people still enjoy. I've been really looking forward to this game because I feel like this is exactly what I want to play on Vita, so I'm super jazzed about that game. And it's supposed to come out in November. I'm not sure if that's still going to happen, but that's probably goes Resogun and then Memories of Celceta for me.
Go ahead.
I'm super jazzed for the immediate future for Lego Marvel Super Heroes next week, and then Batman Arkham Origins at the end of that.
I can't get excited about Batman Arkham Origins.
I'm not like full throttle crazy about it, but I'm like, it's gonna be more Batman. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's more Batman, a new Batman story. That's what's exciting.
Yeah.
With the same gameplay I like.
I'm taking a wait and see approach with that one. If it gets great reviews, I'll check it out.
And then closer to the holidays, you know what I'm excited for? That Mario game, that name I can never remember.
Yes,
Super Mario 3D World.
It is
Super
so
Mario
bland.
World 3D.
Land.
Wii U Brothers.
Brian, what is the
Luigi?
Title?
Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah, not that difficult.
Land There's Luigi. One I was screwing up. I thought I was screwing it up real bad.
The Year of Luigi.
That is a fantastic Mario game. And it's sort of them going, it's sort of Nintendo saying, hey, look, you know, we've given you the same game for 3 years in a row now. You know, on consoles and handhelds and stuff like that. 3D Land was basically the only new step that franchise has taken since Galaxy, I think. And I love all those games. But 3D World is like, it's it's one step below Galaxy in terms of insanity, but it's right up against it, you know? Like, it's grounded in a world. It's not, you're not shooting off in space, but it's so insane. It's one of the weirdest Mario games they've made yet.
And Catsuit is awesome.
Yeah, it's really awesome. There's a lot of power-ups that are totally different. The multiplayer completely changes the way you play that game. Like,
and it's not like the annoying multiplayer. That was the thing about New Super Mario Brothers. When I play it with people on the Wii, right, or like family members, I'd be trying to do like my perfect Mario run, and they'd be jumping on my head and screwing me up and killing me, and then I'd come in the dumb bubble. Whereas like this multiplayer one, it felt like it was kind of, everybody go do your thing. You know what I mean? Like it's 3D world. But I mean, you can run around on the map and do whatever. And then occasionally, like I had to get on a giant dragon or whatever and go down the water and
with
jump
your,
on
with
stuff.
Your friends and stuff. Yeah, I really like the competitive aspect the multiplayer has, which is sort of just like, instead of just running left to right like you do in all the Mario games, it's open world a little bit while still being in kind of confined levels. And there's a point system based on your actions, and there's a clearly defined winner at the end of each level. Yeah. Like, player 2 won, Mario won, Toad lost. Suck it up, Toad.
As usual.
Yeah, as usual. That idiot.
Stupid Toad.
There's also Zelda.
Yeah, so, I mean, that could go anywhere right now. I'm not really sure.
Really? You're not feeling like 100%?
I am, but I haven't played a handheld Zelda that I've like completely fallen in love with.
I know what you mean.
Since like Link's Awakening. And I really like the DS ones. They were cool. They had some nice touchscreen stuff.
What about the Oracle games? Those games were awesome.
Well, yeah, yes. I mean, that's
you're going back to Game Boy Color, right?
Yeah. Those games, you're going back to like 4-bit.
But all the DS games, I got burned out on. I don't think I finished any of them.
Yeah.
Phantom Hourglass.
I did too, you know, like,
and Spirit Tracks.
It's kind of disappointing, but I'm not wild about where the console Zeldas have gone. I don't like all the like waggling and motion control and all that stuff. I think that like that has to be pulled back a little bit. And I do love sort of just like sitting there with this cool handheld and being like, I have this puzzle dungeon to get through right now. And I think this is kind of going to bring all those things I love about Zelda back together again. Mm. But I got to be cautious because Zelda franchises burned me recently. So
yeah, the thing about that game, like A Link to the Past is one of the great games of all time. And so they're invoking that game with this, and so I'm a little wary of it, you know, because like A Link to the Past is so sacred and so special of a game that if they can replicate half of how good that game was, this game's gonna be great.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, you know, you wonder with their, you know, Nintendo's need to always go back and have a touchstone somewhere in their past, you know, like I'd be more interested to see, you know, a new Zelda, something totally different, an open world
apparently
Zelda.
We're gonna see that at E3.
Imagine if Retro did a Zelda game that was, you know, like Skyrim or something.
You want
like
a first person like Skyrim?
Like where you have like Hyrule was like totally open and you can explore it and really get into it.
I mean, I think they give you enough of that. I think if you want to play Skyrim, play Skyrim. People want a Skyrim that doesn't have shitty characters in it. Mm. That's what they want. Mm. And that's what they would get from a Zelda game, right? Because people are too afraid to admit that walking around Skyrim is that dude with the upside down garbage on his head. Nobody cares about him. But if it was Link, it would change the world, right? But I think that what they're doing with A Link Between Two Worlds actually is more open world than anything they've done for a top-down Zelda. Like, you can play most of the dungeons out of order. You can go and get items at any order you want. So they're getting there with that. I just don't know if I want, like, a full-fledged, like, hey, here's an entire world, do whatever you want at your own pace. Like,
yeah. Well, I'm happy to hear that because, you know, the dark world in A Link to the Past was very nonlinear, and that was something that, like, once you beat the first dungeon, you got the mallet, I think it was, then you can do almost whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
So I like that. I'm excited about that game. I think I'm going to buy that one. I haven't bought or acquired a 3DS game since Fire Emblem, I guess. So that will be, you know, I wanted to get Pokemon, but I just can't do it.
You know? I know.
I played so many of the, I played almost all the Pokemon games, every generation, wrote strategy guides for some of them, and I just can't do it again. It's too much of a time sink.
So I've never played a Pokemon game before until last night.
I started
playing Pokemon Y for the first time last night. And it's fun. Like, I get why people are hooked on this thing. For me, it being the first Pokemon I've ever played, it's not very intuitive. Like, I think that people who've been playing it for years are probably like, man, this makes perfect sense to me. But for me, like, I was telling Greg at lunch before, like, I went into battle and all my Pokemon are dead. So now I'm walking around with a bag of dead Pokemon. I got roller skates on. I'm moving really quickly. I don't know how to bring it back to life yet, but I'm learning these things kind of on the fly.
Got to bring it to the Pokemon Center.
Exactly. Well, see, multiple people have told me that today, Colin. But the game had not told me that yet, so I got to go home and, you know, bring my dead and wounded Pokemon to the Pokemon Center.
Fair
get
enough.
That fixed.
Sacrifice but, your own blood to bring them back to life.
They're only wounded. They're fainted, right?
Yeah, they faint.
That's true. And I will say the one thing I'm sort of like cautiously optimistic about right now is Dead Rising 3.
Is that
and
me too?
I think it's.
I'm not optimistic. That's what open world.
Not optimistic.
It's the game that like I'm most excited for on Xbox One outside of Peggle 2.
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah. At launch, but like having not played it and not really seen much on it, I'm super like, I want to see how this pans out. You know what I mean? Like I really want to see how this reviews and see what people are saying about it when they actually get to go play it.
It does feel weird that we haven't really gotten like here's a ton of time with this game,
right?
Right. And I mean it's a month away. Mm-hmm. So what's
and that's what terrifies me about it is that we haven't seen. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I never got into Dead Rising because it's got those time-based quests, and I feel like I'm being rushed around." Like, and they asked me, "Does Dead Rising 3 have that?" And I'm like, "I have no idea. I don't know." And granted, I'm not like poring over our previews for it. You know what I mean? It's one of those I want to just find out what people think of the final product, not a 15-minute mm-hmm. vertical slice of it. But I have no real idea what we're getting into, and it is. Weird not to have seen so much.
I feel like we knew more about the original Dead Rising before it launched than we know about Dead Rising 3. Mm. And that's a shame.
Yeah.
Right? It tells you something, though.
Yeah, it does. It's the old, like, the movie reviewers haven't seen the movie until they buy the movie ticket.
Yeah it's like...
that's never a good sign.
Well, I mean, Mike, like, think about how open Microsoft is with Titanfall because they're so confident in that game. Right. Or Sony, right. Like, you can play Killzone and Knack, like, at the drop of the hat.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have we played those games at this point because they're confident in those games? So... I think it's definitely worth reading into it because I'm excited about that game too. I think that game looks awesome.
Exactly, it looks awesome, and they put but like you know at Comic-Con right, like the Xbox One booth was Rise and Forza right,
and
like,
Titanfall.
And Titanfall, yeah, like okay, where's Dead Rising? Like that's the one that is the one that I think.
See, and I think it's sort of my brain. I'm doing the typical fanboy thing where my brain's going, well, I bought an Xbox One. So this has to be good. You know, like something has to be great. Because to me, it's not Rise. I don't care about Rise, and I don't care about Forza, and it's
That's the way people felt about Zombie U on Wii U, and they were like, we really have to like this game, don't we? Because we're not going to have it.
Actually, a lot of people really enjoyed Zombie U. Greg wasn't one of them, but I actually really liked
it. It's like how I felt about Fantavision when I bought a PlayStation 2.
Sure.
Yeah. It's this like, well, I'm only going to have this or play Summoner, so this I might as well do something.
I'm sure you'll have plenty of chances to overrate a bunch of trash on the PS4.
Peggle 2 is the Xbox One game.
Yeah.
Is that season. Day one?
It's the launch window.
Got it.
It's supposed to be this year, so.
Remember, Pikmin was launch window for Wii U.
Yeah. Yeah.
Missed that boat by
launch
a year.
Launch year. Year Luigi.
Those are all my picks. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you guys are excited about?
Super HD DC Universe Online, day one on PS4.
Super HD? Yeah. Is that a thing?
That's what I call it.
Okay.
When I try to explain it to people.
I will say that announcement yesterday of some of the like kind of classic PS3 titles coming to PS4 and Vita. I thought that was a really cool announcement. It's sort of like everybody should learn from that.
Yeah.
The cross-platform buying of like Flow and Flower and how
Sound Shapes. Yeah.
Yeah, Sound Shapes. Like I don't know how much
Pixel
better
monsters.
Yeah. Yeah, we need that. Yeah. I don't know how much better Sound Shapes will look on PS4.
It looks.
But
better.
I know. Does it?
I played them all.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks better. But I think the game that's really gonna blow everyone away is Flower.
Really?
The game looks insane on the PS4. It really does. It really looks. Absurd.
And I have that game already, so it's free.
It is.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it is cool because, so first of all, I found out Flowers coming, you know, we've known it's coming to Vita. It's coming to Vita the day the PS4 launches. They want to launch them all at the same time. And if you own any of these games, if you own Sound Shapes on Vita, well, the PS4 version's free then. If you own Escape Plan on Vita, and I played Escape Plan as well, then you buy Escape Plan on PS4. Mm-hmm. You don't have to buy Escape Plan, rather, on PS4. It's free. So I think it's cool. I'm getting a little concerned about the number of ports that are coming and with, you know, word that Drive Club is not going to be a launch game now. There's really only three first-party games. Two of them technically first-party. Killzone and Knack and Resogun is a X-Dev game.
I would rather see ports than backwards compatibility if they're going to up-res all their ports.
For sure. Like,
that's really cool.
I just think we need, you know, we have Infamous on the horizon. I understand people's concerns about, you know, where are the AAA games. I'm excited about a lot of these smaller indie games. I think they're, you know, last year proved that Journey was better than everything that came out last year anyway. So, like, I like these smaller games. I'm excited about them. But, you know, other than Infamous and The Order, like, what are the other first-party exclusives on PS4? Like, we don't...
Welcome the console launches, buddy.
We just...
This is the way... It's just a... I bought a Wii U a year ago. No one else here did. It's been a rough year. All right? Like, you have a few months worth of... I don't know what I'm going to do with my Xbox One if Dead Rising 3 sucks. I'm not going to play Rise.
You're going to play Peggle.
I'm going to play Peggle.
You're going to watch your fantasy scores on the
NFL. I paid $500 to play Peggle.
You got that sick achievement, too.
Yeah. Day one.
That's why I'm doing it. Get my day one controller.
Thanks, guys. Those are just a few of our most anticipated holiday games, but what are yours? Let us know in the comments, on Twitter, and stay tuned for more from IGN Gamescoop. Welcome back to GameScoop, everybody. I'm your host, Damon Hadfield. I'm joined now by Greg Miller, Justin Davis, Colin Moriarty.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Call of Duty and gamers and whether or not Call of Duty players are gamers and what makes a gamer. How do you define it in today, 2013, as we roll into a new generation of consoles? This comes out of a story this week. Call of Duty executive producer Mark Rubin says, "We have an enormous amount of players who are more in the casual game space, but they play a lot. It's kind of a weird, ironic thing to say. They aren't hardcore gamers or even gamers at all, but they play Call of Duty every night."
Your wheels just grind and seize together when you read that sentence.
Which led GameScoop superfan Big Tony Style. To ask us, after the Call of Duty devs said superfans of the series are not really gamers at all, I was wondering what the Scoop Crew's thoughts are on the term gamer. How do you guys define gamers, or is it a term that even needs to be defined?
Oh, I'm going first.
Like, I don't know. We're all just looking around to see who goes first.
Greg and I touched on this. Touched on this a little bit in Podcast Beyond yesterday, which was I'm more confused about why everyone wants to categorize this and disparage the other things that people like and enjoy. And we,
who's disparaging who?
Everybody's disparaging everybody else.
Yeah. I'm a hardcore gamer, not one of these casual Call of Duty players.
Like, I think about my cousin. And you know, he's my PlayStation Network friend or whatever, and I see him every once in a while. And he plays Call of Duty all the time. And then he'll play like Madden a little bit and like NHL a little bit, and that's it. But otherwise he's always playing Call of Duty. Now, like, would he consider himself a gamer? Probably not, but he likes Call of Duty, and that's fine. That's his prerogative. And it seems like with Call of Duty, because it's so popular, that everyone just wants to take a stab at it because it's on the, you know, at the top. Mm. And even its competition, like we were talking about on Beyond, loves to take stabs at it because it's beating everything else, you know? And so I just don't understand, you know, I'm into like more niche JRPGs, for instance, and things that like, and I don't care what other people think about that. Like, and people that play Call of Duty don't care what other people think about them playing Call of Duty. So there's a lot of like disparaging going on with trying to categorize people as this kind of gamer or this kind of gamer. Who cares? Like, that's,
I mean, that's the whole stereotype, right? Is that people like, oh, they play Call of Duty and Madden. And they, we all know that these gamers exist. Like, those are the only two games they play every year, or maybe NHL or some other sports game. And we know a lot of gamers like that exist because Call of Duty sells so much better than anything else that comes out. So just math shows
GTA,
you. Yeah, except for maybe GTA. Like, yeah. So it's just interesting that Infinity Ward recognizes this about their own game.
Yeah, I mean, to me it's a poor choice of words, but there's no better way to explain what he's trying to say, right? He's trying to say that he understands this is a franchise that will sell to groups of people who don't buy other games, who don't know what Gone Home is, who don't, you know, have a DS, who are only in it for Call of Duty or in it for Madden and stuff. And so to say casual makes it sound like he's taking a jab at him when he's really just trying to say that they aren't the person who's on IGN every day, reading everything and trying to figure out, are the PlayStation DualShock 4s, are they in stores right now? I need to get out and check it out.
It's a total mistake to say that they're not gamers. Like,
right,
that was,
right.
And I'm sure if he could roll back that statement or modify it, like he meant to say sort of what we're hopefully clarifying now would be my assumption.
I mean, it's easier for him to say, right, like they have this hardcore Call of Duty audience that maybe isn't a hardcore gamer. You know what I mean?
I think labels like that, like, I also hate the labels. I don't like calling things indie games,
right,
like, just because that doesn't mean anything anymore. Like, core gamer doesn't mean anything. But that's like a shorthand for what's like a very long explanation of, like, do you count as a core gamer?
It's a nebulous description.
Is it the amount of games that you play? I was telling Damon that my mom is 60, and like hour for hour, she probably doesn't play video games that much less than me, because she has a slot machine app that she loves, and she plays her Wii, and she plays Brain Training, and like she plays a lot of video games.
She still plays Brain Training?
I don't know. The Brain Training might have fallen off by now, but for a long time she was doing a lot of the Brain Training and like iPad games and stuff. And like,
what was her take on the whole Dead Island torso with no head, right?
Exactly.
She's not a real gamer. Get the fuck out of here.
And so it's like, so you can nitpick this stuff. You can nitpick this stuff to death by being like, okay, hour for hour, that must make her a core gamer. But okay, but maybe it's the type of games that you play. But Call of Duty is a hardcore game, but they're not considered core gamers. So it's like, all those labels are kind of silly, but it's a shorthand for know, stuff that people kind of understand.
Who does it matter to? So I can see it mattering to marketers, people who need to, who knowing demographics is their job, right? Knowing how to hit certain demographics. But why does it matter to gamers?
Because I think there's something to be, I mean, I think there's still a sect of gaming that is into it and feels like it's their thing, right? Like, when I was growing up, I was the gamer kid in my group of friends. They all went and played sports and everything else. So for suddenly, if they were going to be considered gamers, I wouldn't have had, like, a problem with it, but it would have, something that made me unique, right? is suddenly maybe not lessened, but in to some people it is, you know, it's lessened the fact that this person who only plays Call of Duty is a gamer just like me who plays everything and can tell you the ins and outs of the PlayStation Network or something. Like, I get it. I don't think it's right. I fall into Colin's camp of why do you care? Yeah. If you're enjoying what you do, whatever gets sure. you, yeah, man.
Sure. Like Minecraft all sure. night long,
yeah.
like it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. right?
Yeah, it doesn't really make any sense to me. I mean, it just goes back to, you know, people being critical of other people's opinions. It almost ties in the same way where it's like, why do you care what they play? Why do you care what they like? We often have, you know, we brought up the example of Rezogun, which is like by far like my most anticipated next-gen game, and everyone's like, it's an indie game, and it's $10, and it's stupid, or whatever. And it's like, hey, I really don't care what you think about Rezogun because I'm still excited about it. If you want to have your own opinion about it, that's cool, you know? Like, why can't we all coexist in yeah. like an ecosystem where it's like, I like what I like, and you like what you like, and the Call of Duty gamer likes what he likes, and the Madden guy likes what he likes, and that's fun because it's not a huge groupthink, hive mind kind of thing going on here.
Yeah,
that's what's exciting about gaming to me.
You know? I think maybe the next-gen consoles have raised people's hackles a little bit. Where, like, I feel like that died down for a little bit. For a while, people were kind of just playing what they play. And maybe this is just like I'm seeing things differently than reality, but I feel like that fanboy stuff has definitely been, like, and even in IGN comments, it's like people hate indie games, people love indie games, people hate this, people love that. Like, it seems to be getting a little bit worse after dying down for a few years.
Or maybe just the console generation.
That's what I mean. Like, there's new consoles coming out, and people are like putting their flags in the ground and, you know, setting up camp again, and then maybe that'll die down again.
Well, that's why I've always been talking such good things about PC gaming. Because, you know, you never go anywhere. You got the WASDAs, and you're good.
You were trolling hard last night. I give you a lot of props for that.
Those WASDAs.
Yeah.
Going home. Actually, getting back to whether or not these hardcore Call of Duty fans are gamers.
Yeah.
What if you come home from work every night and you watch the same movie, just the one movie, over and over again every night? You spend a lot of time watching this movie, but does that make you a movie lover?
That's a good point. Like I'm not like a huge movie guy. Like Greg knows, I never go to the movies. I refuse to go to the movies. It's too expensive. I don't care. Like I'll watch things on Netflix and like watch TV shows. I love serials and stuff like that. But I'm not really into movies. Now there are movies I love. Right? Like, there are movies that come out that I'm, like, really into, or there are older movies that I really love, but I would never claim that I'm a cinema buff, or, like, I'm really, I'm a movie goer. I like movies. But does that matter to the person who enjoys the movie? Like, if I'm like, I love Caddyshack, and some other guy's like, I love Caddyshack, too, and I've seen more movies than you. You know, it's like, okay, cool. I guess that means something to you, but that doesn't mean anything to me. Like, the thing I was thinking about is, like, I love football, right? And I understand this game. I understand the game of football. Greg understands the game of football. When we watch it, we can identify a blitz. We can look at a package and figure out what they're doing.
But my
girlfriend will watch Jets games with me, and she's still learning the game. She's only been watching it for a few years, and she'll have a lot of questions. But does it matter? Like, she enjoys the game as much as I do. She likes to watch it. She might get something different out of it, but she sits next to me and enjoys those games and gets into them, even though she's seeing something different than I am. And she might not watch Thursday Night Football and Monday Night Football, but she'll watch those Jets games. And I'm wondering, like, what does it matter? She's into the football, and it's just a different kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we should embrace that kind of thing. The bigger games get, and the more they proliferate, the more kinds of games we're going to get. The more people we get in, the more money the industry makes, the more kinds of experiments people will take, risks they'll take. I don't understand like why we're so obsessed with disparaging people that play Call of Duty. Specifically, it bothers me.
I mean, I think that is a minority of people, though. Like, I know guys that, you know, come home, they had a hard day at work. Like, they're usually, like, again, this is a stereotype, so there's all kinds of people that play Call of Duty. But I know dudes that have, like, blue-collar construction worker jobs.
Yeah.
They get home at the end of the day, they're tired, they just want to shoot some dudes in Call of Duty, and that's how they unwind.
Sure.
Like, they're not, like, big gamers, and they don't really care that much. Like, they, even though one comes out every single year, like, it's probably like, oh, there's a new one, I guess maybe I should buy the new one. Like, they're not even really following the news. Like, these are dudes that exist, and I know kids that are 7 that the only video game they play is Minecraft.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just another way to spend time, I guess. It's not about, like, one console versus another, or...
I think there's this, you know, it's for each game, there's a spectrum of involvement. And for video games in general, right? Like, the way smartphones have taken off and the way that we took off really knocked down walls, so there are so many gamers now. And so people feel like they have to be protective of this hobby or whatever, and that this is their thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to Colin's point, like, part of the reason where that concern comes from is, like, if you were a huge JRPG guy, like, Call of Duty could seem a little threatening because, like, now that's where all the money is going. Like, everything was a shooter for a few years. And so it's like, if you see it as threatening the thing that you like, then I can see where some of that, you know, poisonous
rhetoric comes from.
Sure. I mean, the JRPG example is good because Final Fantasy VII was one of those games when it came out where it made JRPGs popular for a little while and brought people into the genre, and people were like so threatened by that, you know? And to me it was like, that's cool because now Square and other companies are going to make more RPGs and take more, you know, risks, and that was why that was a golden age of JRPGs, was because of that game and that experience happening. I mean, we could see a similar thing with shooters. I mean, there are a lot of shooters. Shooters do try to compete with each other. I like the more niche shooters that try to do different things. But, you know, more power to you if you want, you know, if you want to buy only Call of Duty and you buy your console and you buy the DLC and that's what you do, like, that's great. Like, I just don't get it. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I wish people spent more time enjoying their stuff than talking about how everyone's opinions are bad because they're different than theirs. You want to live in a world where everyone's the same as you? That sounds whack to me.
Whether it's true or not, or whether it's right or not, like, these people feel like Call of Duty is being made instead of the game that they would rather be playing. Like, that's where I think it comes from.
I suppose. Activision's doing its thing, though. I mean, Activision, we've talked about this on this podcast, I think, with the same crew before about their particular MO, which is like games have to sell a lot and they have to make lots of money in there, and they're not trying to make, you know, a Vita JRPG for you. They don't care. They want to make the big shooter. They want to put it everywhere. They're not going to make exclusives. They're not going to, you know, like, they're not. We talked about Prototype 2 as a game that like actually sold pretty well, charted on NPD, and they still shut that studio down because it wasn't enough. That's their thing. If you don't like Activision games, don't buy them.
I would argue that I would argue that human beings like games. They like playing games, they like having fun. Whether that means playing board games or crossword puzzles or playing baseball or chess, like every human being likes games. But when we say gamer, that means something very specific, at least traditionally. It talks about somebody who likes video games either on a console or a PC. Like that's a very specific thing.
I mean, we touched on this at the top of the show and I was talking about my mom, where like gamer is something that's almost self-identified. It's like, you know, are you a gamer? No. But you play Pokemon on your DS, and then you play Facebook games, and you play this, so aren't you a gamer? No, I'm not a gamer. Like, that's a real conversation that people have. There's this weird, like, disconnect in people's minds where they don't want to self-identify that way, or they don't feel that they self-identify that way. Like, my mom plays Wii all the time, and is the 60-year-old woman would never say she's a gamer. It's just the people don't want to label themselves that way.
I wonder if that'll ever change.
I bet it will. I mean, I'm not a movie watcher.
That's
I'm not a
movie guy. But everybody loves movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And there isn't like a subset of people who are like movie-ers or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there's cinephiles though and stuff like that. Like, some people would self-identify as like big movie buffs, and other people just casually go to Avengers. Like, and I don't think it's that
different. But they don't argue about it and get into these giant things. I think it's just, you know, another thing of how young video games still are. That there still are generations of people who don't have games as a daily part of their life.
Yeah, I'm curious. I don't know if it is that video games are young or if it's just that movies are, you know, there are people that love Woody Allen movies and look down their nose at Transformers. Like, see that as like, I wish.
That's just a person. That's a person. People know that. Transformers are terrible movies.
But it's like people do look down their nose at the big blockbusters and prefer like art house films, right? And like people that are really, really deep into video games are maybe the equivalent of that. Like, I don't know that it's just, we always talk about how video games are young and in a couple decades they'll be like a lot more accepted. And I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's always going to be this way a little bit.
I'll bet you pizza it's not.
Well, I already owe you one, right?
So in 20 years.
Yeah. A couple decades, we want to see what's up.
We have witnesses. In 20 years, if it hasn't changed, Justin owes Greg a pizza.
Space pizza.
Yeah.
To wrap up and bring it back to the original, two questions. First of all, does it matter? Is it important to identify which people are gamers?
No,
definitely not.
Okay. Then the second question, how do we define our gamer, then isn't as important, I guess.
Yeah, I think gamer is self-identified. I think you identify yourself as a gamer, then you determine what that means for you, in my opinion.
Thanks, guys. Viewers, what do you think? Do you self-identify as a gamer, and how do you define the term gamer? Let us know in the comments, let us know on Twitter, and stay tuned for more from IGN GameScoop.
Crazy rewind talk.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com, just like Abraham did.
Abraham.
It's Abraham.
Sacrifice your son.
Wow. Old Testament.
Thanks. You should read it.
Maybe you should review it.
Play your Nintendo baby games. I did. 6.5.
Did
good
you get trophies
great.
For that?
God, I wish.
Listeners, your listener mail panel today includes Greg Miller and Brian Altano.
Hi.
Ibrahim asks, has video games made movies less enjoyable? For me, some types of movies, such as action, have become less enjoyable due to video games, but horror movies have been completely ruined by video games due to the fact that games are more immersive and therefore more scary.
Interesting.
Wow.
Never thought about it.
Neither did I.
I used to be really into movies. I still like going to the movies, but I never do it, and it's just because I'd rather go home and play something. I'd rather play a game. I don't watch TV anymore outside of Nashville, the greatest show ever.
I wonder if it's just growing up, you start to have more discerning taste. Because when I was a kid, I saw every action movie, every horror movie.
Me too.
I thought they were all awesome. If I saw Commando today, what would I be like, this movie's
this
amazing.
Is awesome.
Well, and that works with video games too. A lot of the ones we grew up with, you go back to play again, you're like, oh man, that's not that great. But see, I don't know, Greg, you present it sort of like they're all fighting for your time, and you'd rather spend your time playing a video game. But I don't know if I'm like, man, I don't like this movie because I can't control what's happening.
Immersed. See, I don't know if that's for sure not what I'm saying. I'm thinking it's just more the fact of, do I want to go see this new Hunger Games? Nah, not really. I'd rather do all of this.
Yeah.
Christine wants to see it, so I'm going to see new Hunger Games eventually. But
I don't think it's a matter that movies aren't as immersive.
When we go see our Paranormal Activity movies, I don't sit there and go, man, this isn't scary because I'm not controlling the girl.
I wish I could press the triangle on that cupboard and close it before the ghost pops
out. You think, man, this isn't scary because these movies have gotten really dumb.
Yeah. I'm excited about the new one. What's it called? Deep Dive?
The Marked Ones. Nope.
The Marked Ones.
Paranormal Activity Deep Dive.
The Deep Dive, all right?
Takes place in a pool.
This is Nestor.
Hey, Nestor.
If it's the Nestor from the old
The original. Power yeah, star of Funky Bowling.
Magazines. He says, I was recently watching a YouTube video by Anita Sarkeesian about the damsel in distress scenario in video games as a recurring theme.
Sure. Tropes versus video games.
She views it as a medium that places women as objects and weak, needing a man to save them. Do you believe that this plot device is troublesome in gaming? Would you and other gamers be inclined to buy such a game where the roles were reversed?
I'd love to buy that game.
Yeah.
I have no problem. So, the girl has to go save the guy. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
100%,
Given the choice, I always play as a girl in a game.
Yeah, and I mean, that trope is probably the least of our concerns with bad video game stories. Like, I think that the problem is that most video game stories are kind of trite and old-fashioned and stupid or just very vanilla and rudimentary. I'd like to see better storytelling, period, whether regardless of genre or gender or roles or anything like that.
The story of the prince or the hero having to go off and save the girl did not start with video games.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
That's an old story.
It's throwing back to fables and every fairy tale, right?
Sure.
It's just how stories were told, and so you go through, and it's such an... I think for, us being dudes, you don't really think about it until it gets pointed out, right? And that's been the big thing of, why Anita's video has gotten big, right? And the fact that you are calling this out. And for us, it's always more like when they reveal that god-awful, the great, amazing-looking Phantom Pain trailer, and then they got the quiet, and her boobs are hanging out, and she's in a bikini, and she has no tongue, and it's just like, what?
She has no tongue? Oh, that's why she's called quiet?
She couldn't talk.
That might not be confirmed. That's what I had heard from somebody, and then, we couldn't confirm it right before we went on Up at Noon, and then I've done no research since.
Right.
But, that's the whole thing. She doesn't speak in it, I think we know for sure.
I mean, I'm totally with Greg. I think that, that's a different problem. That's something that should be fixed no matter what. I think that any video game that's just about saving something in a cage, whether it be Donkey Kong's bananas or Super Mario or somebody else, is just like, hey, this person's in a locked room, spend the entire game getting this locked room. It's kind of old, right? And it's not old as in it's old fashioned, it is like what Damon said, but it's kind of stale. I'm just kind of sick of doing that. Cause it only means when you get to the end, the person's going to be like, thanks, or you're going to eat the banana, or the reward, you have the carrot the entire game, right?
And right.
Like, then you know what the carrot tastes like at the end. Sometimes that carrot's a woman.
Taste the woman.
Taste the carrot. Taste the woman.
I know what the woman tastes like now. This is Andrew.
Hi, Andrew. Is it Goldfarb?
Probably.
He's gone.
Let's just assume. Let's assume it's him.
It's not gone.
This is a
gone forever.
There's a little bit more words here. So. A
lot of words from Andrew. He must be. He's a wordy news writer. Is it all about BioShock?
Bear with him. He says, I really feel like everyone's vision of next gen is oversaturated by higher resolution and more realistic visuals. Don't get me wrong. Visuals is a part of it, but not the first thing I look forward to. To me, it's always been about the controller. I've been gaming for a while, and going from console to console has always been the feel of a new control scheme. I always think to myself, how will these companies have me interact with the software this time? I remember gaming on the Super Nintendo controller and going to the N64 using a small analog stick for the first time, and that was thrilling. Now, I'm not saying strap something onto my foot or anywhere else, but as long as I can hold it in both hands and feels comfortable, I'll be satisfied. I do give props to Sony for finally upgrading their DualShock series and Microsoft for their modest upgrades, but for also pushing Kinect. I've always admired Nintendo for changing it up every single generation since they've been in the business. Blah, blah, blah. To me, true innovation is interactivity. There's
well,
TV
we all know infograms is innovation.
Yeah, there's the TV screen and you, but what's between you two is the controller, and that defines how you will play. Not sure what my direct question is, but I would have to say, are we too obsessed with visuals and not about controller interactivity?
For years, visuals have been the easiest way to point at and yeah. say, look at that, that's why
at
I'm
glance,
spending all this
right?
money. Yeah.
At a glance, you can see this game looks better than this game.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's, right now, I don't, you know, it's one of those things where I think there's modest upgrades between generations, and so people are a little bit lost as to what they do with it. I think it's more what we're talking about with storytelling, right?
That yeah.
developers
yeah.
getting older and, you know, being able to tell these stories, things like Gone Home, things like Last of Us, things like Walking Dead last year, experiences that are finally, you know, pushing boundaries as far as what we're doing and how you tell.
I look at this generation as sort of like the... It's like the iPhone 4S or the iPhone 5S where you're like, I have this thing. It's great. It, fundamentally, it's fantastic. It does everything I need to do. But there are little marginal improvements that I couldn't have thought of myself that smarter people are thinking of and they're doing. If this generation is to be judged innovation-wise by the improvements in the controllers, then that's kind of sucks right now because
well yeah
they're not they're no one's taking huge leaps there either, right?
This I mean, is the DualShock 4.
Yeah, exactly.
I except... mean,
the Steam controller.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
So if you're
right.
really looking for innovation in controllers, maybe the Steam Box is what you
Yeah, that's I mean, that's kind of weird that it was like all the other next gen consoles were announced and then we saw the Steam controller and I was like, that's the one that's different than anything I've ever seen before. And I mean, I have a DualShock 4 in my house right now.
Yeah.
I pick it up every now and then and I hold it and I go, well,
you take a deep sigh.
Sure is another PlayStation controller. And then the new Xbox One controller, it's great. It's got rumbling buttons, you know, and stuff, bumpers and stuff like that, but
oh, doctor.
It's the same. Rumble it's triggers. The same controller. Like
yeah.
It's not like the N64 or the even the Wii well, and so even you know.
If we go back, so 8-bit to 16-bit, they just threw more buttons on the controller.
Yeah.
But 16 to 32-bit, they added analog sticks.
Yeah.
And that was a really really big deal.
Well, yeah. I mean, when they threw more buttons on the controller, they also did shoulder buttons for the first time. That was huge. Four face buttons. They did like a you know.
I mean, the Genesis had six face buttons.
Yeah, and an 8-way directional pad. Yeah. Where you can go. I can go diagonally for the first time ever.
Wow.
But that was about it. Yeah.
But as soon as we got those dual analog sticks, we've had that now for years.
Yeah.
Right. They introduced that on the original PlayStation, PS2, PS3, and now the PS4 is all basically the same.
Yeah, it's kind of like how I feel about like you know like smartphones, where we had smartphones look different every year for the longest time, and they've looked the same for the last 6 years now.
Right.
And I don't know if that's changing anytime soon. Like the next one has to be something like the Steam controller, or and the guy says something you hold in two hands. Maybe it won't even be that. I don't know if it'll be Kinect, but maybe.
I mean, you remember one of the reasons I was super excited for the Wii was the fact that it was going to be like this new way to control games as far as like when they first announced it, right?
And yeah.
Like when I was super stoked to get to play all the old NES and Super NES games I missed being a Sega kid. Like I thought it was super cool that, you know, you're pointing and interacting that way and then turning it and playing old school games that way.
Yeah.
And then they started adding all the stuff you hate. But, you know, at the time we didn't know any better and that was cool. And then Kinect was in the same way, right? Like control this and then move was a total piece of garbage.
Mm-hmm. Well, Move was good fundamentally. It's just it didn't
tech-wise great. Totally, Johnny come lately.
We didn't care. Developers
gamers.
Didn't care. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, luckily, they let it go. Sort of.
Kind of. How much cheaper would the DualShock 4 be if it didn't have Move functionality inside?
Because I don't know. You look at the graphics side by side, and nothing really goes. Man,
whoa. Like Titanfall is like the one for a lot of people. There's little improvements when I look at Infamous where I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You can do that in PS3.
Like today, you know, the Call of Duty review went up today and we put up a side-by-side comparison piece. I don't see a huge difference between like PS3 and PS4.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Resogun looks cool, right? They're doing more particle effects, but if you stripped out those particle effects, it would still probably look awesome on PS3.
Yeah, I think so too. Before we go, what games are we gaming right now? I'm still really, really into Assassin's Creed 4.
Holding off.
Yeah.
I'm still holding off.
Yeah, I'm holding off for PS4 day one.
I jumped right into it.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. You like it?
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Awesome. I just got done, or at least to my level of done, with Arkham Origins. I had beaten the game a while ago, but then I was going through and doing Riddler challenges and all that stuff.
You said you loved the game.
I did, loved it, yeah. I mean, and I'm not saying it's perfect by any means, obviously, sure. on that. I think maybe a little bit higher than our IGN score, but it wouldn't have been crazy much higher. But it's great Batman story, tons of fun, you know what I mean? More stuff to do. Right now, I'm trying to knock out I was trying some Vita stuff. I did Blackgate for a little bit last night, and I'm like, no, I'm good.
Really? Yeah, really, it's not great?
No, not great. I wasn't feeling it, you know what I mean? And that's the good thing now. I'm not reviewing this great game. Go on to something else. Yeah, see you later. Yeah.
How about you, Brian?
I started Lego Marvel, which is really fun.
Lego Marvel's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's like the pacing's fantastic. The first level feels like something that would be the last level of the game.
Yep.
You're playing as different heroes every single time, which in most Lego games is kind of just like, hey, I'm another Jedi, or hey, I'm a droid, or hey, I'm another guy from Harry Potter.
They're so cute. All the characters are so cute.
Yeah, everyone in Lego Marvel plays totally different. They have totally different stuff. And Super Castlevania 4. Going back to that old chestnut. Nice. Love that game.
See, now I was super jazzed for Lego. It came out same time as Batman.
Yeah.
Did Batman, and now I've only played a level of Lego, and now I'm like, well, I might as well wait for PlayStation 4 on this too.
Yeah,
get it super HD.
What are you going to play like for the next week then? I guess you're
going
to be traveling.
I'm traveling a lot. Yeah, I got other stuff going on. Yeah. I should be all right.
You're going to this PS4 launch event.
Yeah, I know. New York City, they call it the Big Apple. What's going to happen there with me and Scott Lowe? We're going to find out. Find out on IGN.com.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. That's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.